The Middle East looked nice and cozy for a while. Yeah, there's certainly been an uptick in violence. It's a snapshot. It's a moment.
Yeah, that was him. Good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network at 7 past the hour. Thanks for joining us tonight. The Decider held an impromptu Rose Garden press conference today, still talking tough about Iraq while admitting that casualties on both sides are likely to rise. Not that that means anything to George W. Bush. He seems oblivious to the fact that no one wants this war and there is no support for this illegal occupation. So we have some murderous moron sounds on the program tonight. What Keith Olbermann said last night. We're going to be sharing that with you tonight, too. And what Dennis Kucinich said, I think it was today or yesterday. I don't know how we're going to squeeze it all in, Kathy. We had today was not a real happy day here at the Malloy Homestead. Molly had her first experience with a dead creature today. We were doing some work up near the road, and Molly came across something. She pointed. She said, "Daddy, what's this?" And I came over, and it was a large dead robin, fully grown robin. And I said, "Oh, well, that's a dead bird." And of course, she immediately wanted to reach for it. And I said, "No, hold on, don't touch it." The bugs had already started to swarm, but she took a look at it, and she looked at me, and she looked at the bird and looked at me, because, you know, we have bird feeders all around the property, and she constantly watches. Plus, we have a nest. I think it's a Georgia thrush who built a nest in a bush alongside the split rail fence here, and we had to move the nest. And that kind of freaked me out, but I think we did it successfully because the parents are still tending to the hatchlings. The two hatchlings in the nest and one egg. And when we moved it, we showed them to Molly, and she just about freaked. You know, little tiny, tiny birds. And as soon as they feel a vibration, their mouths pop open. So she has a lot of exposure to birds around the property and hawks and all sorts of things. But this is the first dead animal of any size other than a bug, and as you know, if you listen to the program a lot, you hear me talk about it a lot. She'll be three in a couple of months, and so she was just couldn't figure it out. So we got a Coca-Cola box, and I cut off the end of it, and we made a little coffin. Kathy was a bit under the weather today, so Molly and I are doing this on our own. We made a little coffin. I got a shovel from back behind the house, and there's a magnolia tree not far from our front porch. So we went to the side of the magnolia tree and dug a little shallow grave and put the box in there. And when I started to put the dirt on that put the dirt back on and the pine needles and stuff, you know, Molly kind of looked at that like she couldn't figure it out. So we finished the burial, and, you know, all the time I'm talking a mile a minute so that I don't freak. And I just said, "Well, you know, the bird is dead, honey. It's dead. It's not alive anymore. It doesn't fly anymore. It doesn't sing anymore. It doesn't hop around anymore. It doesn't have babies anymore. It doesn't make nests anymore. It's just, like, dead." How do you explain that? You know, this is an almost three-year-old. So tonight, right before the program, when we're doing storytelling, I've said before, Kathy reads a book to her, and then I usually make up some jive turkey nonsense story and tell her before she goes to sleep. So she wanted to know about the bird. Whew. For those of you who've had kids or grandkids or both, you know what I'm talking about. Man, what a challenge, right? To, you know, especially at our age or your age, my age, trying to explain to an almost three-year-old, whether it's your kid or your grandkid, death. And it's it is a challenge. It is a challenge. And so that's sometimes when I feel like, damn, why did you turn out to be an atheist? You know, in reference to myself, because it'd be so easy just to say, well, the birdie went to heaven. The birdie went to see Allah or Jesus or Buddha or somebody, you know, but you can't do that. So, or I can't do it. having an almost three-year-old around the house has really ground you when you need it. Certainly grounds me when I need it. I've had a couple of nights here on this program where I've, admittedly I've been out of control. Just terrible stuff. I sometimes forget the real important stuff, which is trying to explain to a three-year-old what a dead bird means. What does that mean? You know, what is that? Where the entire universe, everything, focuses on that moment. Nothing else exists except, you know, kneeling down with a three-year-old and digging a hole and trying to explain why we're digging a hole, putting the bird in the box and putting the box in the ground and covering up. It's makes you forget, makes me forget all about George W. Bush. It's a real challenge. But you know that. You know that if you have kids. And if you don't have your own kids, you have nieces, nephews, you have neighborhood kids, you know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about. Okay, end the program. Let's put on some Pink Floyd and call it a night and go drink some wine. A couple of quick items here. There are some lawmakers, some House members, who have written to the House Armed Services Committee chairman yesterday and wanted to know why the United States military has kicked out of its ranks 58 Arabic language experts because they were gay. And the members of Congress want the Pentagon to explain how this can happen, how it can afford to let these specialists with this incredibly valuable training at a time when we are launching a global war against anyone who is Islamic. Let's be real. This has nothing to do with... Well, it has to do with oil, but it also has to do with the Crusades. We're back to the 10th, 11th, 12th century. We're back there with the leadership we've got now on both sides. I understand that the Islamists want us out for valid reasons, but they're just as psychopathic as Bush and his cronies. So here we are. Anyway, we have a conflict that is going to go on for a long, long time. There's going to be a lot of burning, a lot of death, a lot of destruction, a lot of it, just a lot of it. So given that, you would think that we would want translators who understood what our newly developed and shiny and polished enemy is talking about, the people who speak Arabic. But no, because they're gay, the Pentagon says, no, get out of here. We would rather do some really stupid things and not understand the enemy with whom we are going to burn heaps and heaps and heaps of bodies over the next decade or two. We would rather just not understand them than have some queers in the military who do understand and can tell us what is going on. No, don't want that. Don't want that. Former Navy Petty Officer Second Class Benjamin Stephen Benjamin said his supervisor tried to keep him on the job. He's a translator, and urged him to sign a statement saying he was not gay. This is according to Associated Press. Benjamin said his lawyer advised against signing the statement because it could be used against him later if other evidence surfaced. You know, like an email to his boyfriend. Oh, God forbid. In an interview with the Associated Press, Benjamin said he was caught improperly using the military's secret-level computer system to send messages to his roommate, who was serving in Iraq. In those messages, he said he may have referred to being gay or going on a date or some horrific, terrible thing like that. Benjamin said, I'd always been out since the day I started working there. We had conversations about being gay in the military and what it was like. There were no issues with unit cohesion. I never caused divisiveness or ever experienced slurs. He was in the Navy for nearly 4 years. Representative Marty Meehan, who has sought a repeal on all this nonsense, the don't ask, don't tell insanity, organized a letter to Representative Ike Skelton, a Democrat from Missouri, asking the committee to hold a hearing about the Arabic linguists. Meehan said, at a time when our military is stretched to the limit and our cultural knowledge of the Middle East is dangerously deficient, I just can't believe that kicking out able, competent Arabic linguists is making our country any safer. Now, how insane is this? I'll tell you coming back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Learn to speak a language. Learn to speak Arabic. Those in the Arabic region will say, gosh, America's interested in us. They care enough to learn how we speak.
Yeah, unless they're gay, and then they'll be fired if they work for the military. So that's what happened. 58 Arabic language experts have been relieved of their military duties because their immediate supervisors or commanding officers discovered they were gay, usually by monitoring their emails as they wrote to their boyfriends or their girlfriends or whatever. And that's too much for the United States of America. 2007? It's too much for America here in the 10th century or wherever we are. So they were fired, which means that as we continue down this path of endless war, and it's going to be vicious and violent, it's going to be horrifying, and it's not going to stop for a long, long time. We should at least have an advantage as a country in being able to understand what our enemy is talking about. No, no. It's more important to get rid of the queers. It is much more important. So then we have the case of Navy Petty Officer Second Class Stephen Benjamin, who was relieved of his duties, and his case is getting some attention now. According to researchers at the California-based Michael Palm Center, which tracks these issues, three Arabic linguists were fired as a result of the computer reviews. Now, they don't fire non-gay people. They don't fire heterosexuals. Heterosexuals can, Benjamin said, investigators from the Defense Department's Inspector General's office pulled the message logs for one day and reviewed them for violations. Some people received administrative punishments for writing dirty jokes, profanity, and explicit sexual references. It's all okay as long as it's heterosexual. If it's homosexual and you're writing to your boyfriend, you're going to be fired. You're going to be relieved of your duties. You're going to be discharged from the military. And if you have special skills needed to wage an endless war, they're going to be gone, which, when you really think about it, may be a good thing. The center's director, the Palm Center director, Aaron Balkin, said, quote, there is simply no common sense reason for the military to fire Arabic linguists in the midst of a dire shortage of translators. Translating Al-Qaeda cables is more important than making sure that the military is free of gays. However, Marine Major Stuart Upton, the Pentagon spokesman, said the Pentagon is enforcing the law. Now, here's why it's important. Have you heard of Al Hurra? Sounds like a wrestler, doesn't it? Al Hurra. But it's A-L Hurra, H-U-R-R-A, Al Hurra Television. That's the U.S. government's $63 million a year effort at public diplomacy broadcasting in the Middle East. We own it. It's a network we own. It's run by executives and officials who cannot speak Arabic. Now, that might explain why the service has recently been caught. This is an American television network in the Middle East broadcasting only in Arabic. The network has been caught recently broadcasting terrorist messages, including an hour-long tirade on the importance of anti-Jewish violence. among other questionable pieces. Facing tough questions before a congressional panel last week, Broadcasting Board of Governors member Joaquin Blaya admitted none of the senior news managers at the network spoke Arabic, and when the terrorist messages made it on the air, nobody knew it. And the messages made it onto the air courtesy of U.S. taxpayer dollars. Nor did Mr. Blaya himself or any of the other officials at the Broadcasting Board of Governors, which oversees the network, none of them speaks Arabic. Representative Gary Ackerman, a Democrat from New York, at the hearing last Wednesday, the House Foreign Affairs Subcommittee said, "How does it happen that the terrorists can take over a network we're funding? Is there no adult supervision?" Mr. Blaya conceded that the top officials in the network's chain of command could not understand what was being said on the Al Hura broadcasts. Now, what I just shared with you was first reported by Congressional Quarterly. You're not going to read it anyplace else. You can go to Congressional Quarterly. You might hear it on Randy's show. You might hear it on Hartman. You might hear it here. Mr. Blaya assured lawmakers it has never been Al Hura's policy to, quote, provide an open live microphone to terrorists. It should not have happened, end quote. Oh, God, aren't you tired of hearing somebody in the Bush crime family saying that about some kind of a screw-up or mass death or broken levees? The station's gaffes have included broadcasting in December last year a 68-minute call to arms against Israelis by a senior figure of the terrorist group Hezbollah. Now, I'm quoting here. I don't necessarily call these groups terrorists. It also included deferential coverage of Iranian President Ahmadinejad's Holocaust denial conference and a factually flawed piece on a splinter group of Orthodox Jews who oppose the State of Israel, according to the Wall Street Journal, which has reported the network's problems for months. Now, what's going to happen with this network? Absolutely nothing. My neck is red, my collar. Twenty-six before the hour. As you know, the $120 billion war spending bill is now a matter of fact that ends weeks of wrangling with Democrats on whether to set a date for a U.S. troop withdrawal. The bill funds the war through September as Bush wants, sets no date for troop withdrawals. In exchange for dropping restrictions on the military, Mr. Bush agreed to some $17 billion in spending added by Democrats to fund domestic and military-related projects. You see, the military-related projects wouldn't have happened, nor would domestic spending like Katrina relief. Bush said, "By voting for this bill, members of both parties can show our troops and the Iraqis and the enemy that our country will support our servicemen and women in harm's way." David Obey, a Democrat of Wisconsin, chairman of the Appropriations Committee, said, "I hate this agreement." Obey said the deal was the best the Democrats could manage because, quote, "the White House is in a cloud somewhere in terms of understanding the realities in Iraq," end quote. This is what Keith Olbermann had to say. "For the president and the majority leaders and candidates and rank-and-file congressmen and senators of either party, there's only blame for the shameful and bipartisan betrayal." This is, in fact, a comment about betrayal. "Few men or women elected in our history, whether executive or legislative, state or national, have been sent into office with a mandate more obvious nor instructions more clear. Get us out of Iraq. Yet after 6 months of preparation and execution, half a year gathering the strands of public support, translating into action the collective will of the nearly 70% of Americans who reject this war of lies, the Democrats have managed only this. The Democratic leadership has surrendered to a president, if not the worst president, then easily the most selfish in our history, who happily blackmails his own people and uses his own military personnel as hostages to his asinine demand that the Democrats give the troops their money. The Democratic leadership has agreed to finance the deaths of Americans in a war that has only reduced the security of Americans. The Democratic leadership has given Mr. Bush all that he wanted, with only the only caveat being not merely meaningless symbolism about benchmarks for the Iraqi government, but optional meaningless symbolism about benchmarks for the Iraqi government. The Democratic leadership has, in sum, claimed a compromise with the administration in which the only things truly compromised are the trust of the voters, the ethics of the Democrats, and the lives of our brave and doomed friends and family in Iraq. You, the men and women elected with the simplest of directions, stop the war, have traded your strength, your bargaining position, and the uniform support of those who elected you for a handful of magic beans. You may trot out every political cliche from the soft soap inside the Beltway dictionary of boilerplate sound bites about how this is the beginning of the end of Mr. Bush's carte blanche in Iraq, about how this is a first step. Well, Senator Reid, the only end at its beginning is our collective hope that you and your colleagues would do what is right, what is essential, what you were each elected and reelected to do. Because this first step is a step right off a cliff. And this president... How shameful it would be to watch an adult hold his breath and threaten to continue to do so until he turned blue. But how horrifying is it to watch a president hold his breath and threaten to continue to do so until innocent and patriotic Americans in harm's way are bled white? You lead this country, sir? You claim to defend it? And yet when faced with the prospect of someone calling you on your stubbornness which has cost 3,431 Americans their lives and thousands more their limbs, you, Mr. Bush, imply that if the Democrats don't give you the money and give it to you entirely on your terms, the troops in Iraq will be stranded or forced to serve longer or have to throw bullets at the enemy with their bare hands. How transcendentally, how historically pathetic. Any other president from any other moment in the panorama of our history would have, at the outset of this tawdry game of political chicken, declared that no matter what the other political side did, he would ensure personally, first, last, and always, that the troops would not suffer. A president, Mr. Bush, uses the carte blanche he has already, not to manipulate an overlap of arriving and departing brigades into a second surge, but to say in unequivocal terms that if it takes every last dime of the monies already allocated, if it takes reneging on government contracts with Halliburton, he will make sure the troops are safe, even if the only safety to be found is in getting them the hell out of there. Well, any true president would have done that, sir. You, instead, used our troops as political pawns, then blamed the Democrats when you did so. Not that these Democrats, who had this country's support and sympathy up until 48 hours ago, have not since earned all the blame they can carry home. Winston Churchill wrote to Lord Moyne in the days after the British signed the Munich Accords with Germany in 1938 the following, quote, "We seem to be very near the bleak choice between war and shame. My feeling is that we shall choose shame and then have war thrown in a little later," end quote. That's what this is for the Democrats, isn't it? Their Neville Chamberlain moment before the Second World War. All that's missing is the landing at the airport with the blinkered leader waving a piece of paper which he naively thought would guarantee peace in our time, but which his opponent would ignore with deceit. The Democrats have merely streamlined the process. Their piece of paper already says Mr. Bush can ignore it with impunity. And where are the Democratic presidential hopefuls this evening? See, they not. That to which the Senate and House leadership has blinded itself? Judging these candidates based on how they voted on the original Iraq authorization or waiting for apologies for those votes is ancient history now. The Democratic nomination is likely to be decided tomorrow. The talk of practical politics, the buying into of the president's dishonest construction, fund the troops or they will be in jeopardy, the promise of tougher action in September, is falling not on deaf ears, but rather falling on Americans who already told you what to do and now perceive your ears as closed to practical politics. Those who seek the Democratic nomination need to, for their own political futures and with 1,000 times more solemnity and importance for the individual future of our troops, they need to denounce this betrayal, vote against it, and if need be, unseat Majority Leader Reid and Speaker Pelosi if they continue down this path of guilty, fatal acquiescence to the tragically misguided will of a monomaniacal president. For ultimately, at this hour, the entire government has failed us. Mr. Reid, Mr. Hoyer, and the other Democrats have failed us. They negotiated away that which they did not own, but had only been entrusted by us to protect. And that is our collective will as the citizens of this country that this brazen war of lies be ended as rapidly and safely as possible. Mr. Bush and his government have failed us. They have behaved venomously and without dignity, of course. That is all at which Mr. Bush is gifted. We are the ones providing any element of surprise or shock here. With the exception of Senator Dodd and Senator Edwards, the Democratic presidential candidates have, so far at least, failed us. They must now speak and make plain how they view what has been given away to Mr. Bush and what is yet to be given away tomorrow and in the 1,000 tomorrows to come. Because for the next 14 months, the Democratic nominating process, indeed the whole of our political discourse until further notice, has, with the stroke of a cursed pen, become about one thing and one thing alone. The electorate figured this out 6 months ago. The president and the Republicans have not, doubtless will not. The Democrats will figure it out during the Memorial Day recess when they go home, and many of those who elected them will politely suggest they stay there, and permanently. Because on the subject of Iraq, the people have been ahead of the media, ahead of the government, ahead of the politicians, for the last 2 years, three maybe. Our politics is now about the answer to one briefly worded question. Mr. Bush has failed, Mr. Warner has failed, Mr. Reid has failed, so. Who among us will stop this war of lies? To he or she fall the figurative keys to the nation. To all the others, presidents and majority leaders and candidates and rank-and-file congressmen and senators of either party, there is only blame for this shameful and bipartisan betrayal. I feel like saying good night and good luck. It really is, a shocking, shocking situation when, obviously for somebody like Oberman, certainly for you, damn sure for me, when you you spend a couple of years, which was pretty much what my stint at Air America for me was all about, trying in whatever little way I added to that collective before Air America went totally schizophrenic and insane as it is now, to try to promote, publicize as many Democratic candidates who are anti-war as possible. And I think we did that. And to some degree, I think Air America had an effect on that election. So to me, it was personal, deeply personal. When this Congress that I felt like I helped elect. Turns out this Democrat Congress turns out to be made up of cowards. Absolute cowards. But when he realized we don't support their attacks, they needed something to distract. Anthrax. Let's further demonize his Afghanis. So Americans cheer while we kill their innocent families. And what better place to start a war? To build a pipeline to get the oil that they had wanted before.
And I can understand people being abhorrent about war. War is terrible.
Ten before the hour. Now, of course, the latest New York Times CBS News poll show that Americans now view the war in Iraq more negatively than at any time since the war began. All the more reason, you see, for the Bush crime family, and especially the twit himself, to just stand there like little sad, arrogant punk that he is, and say the things that he said today, which we will share with you when we come back after the break at the top of the hour. 60% of Americans surveyed said the U.S. should have stayed out of Iraq. Oh, really? Nothing like hindsight, huh, guys? Huh, gals? 6 and 10, huh? I can remember when 7 and 10 said, let's go get the bastards. Remember that? More than 3 and 4, 76% say that things are going badly there. Really? You think? Including nearly half who say things are going very badly. Maybe next time, if there is a next time, the grossly ignorant and easily manipulated American public will listen to the people who get out in the streets and beat the drums and carry the American flags and carry the signs and say, no war, no war. You think? But of course, there probably is not going to be a next time. This war, Bush is right on this. The only thing, you know, I keep asking people, what has he been right on? Here's one. This war, the way it's designed, the momentum that it has, the funding that it's gotten, the graft and corruption it has created, the paramilitary mercenaries it has spawned, the bloodlust it has loosed, means that it is a permanent fixture for probably the next 50 or 60 years. You missed the Cold War? Welcome to the Hot War. My God. 65% of those polled disapprove of what Bush is doing. 30% approve. Majorities of those polled disapprove of Bush's handling of the situation in Iraq. They disapprove of his handling of foreign policy. They disapprove of his handling of immigration. They disapprove of his handling of the economy. And they disapprove of the campaign against terrorism. So what? So what? A large majority of the public, another 76%, including a majority of Republicans, say that the additional American troops sent to Iraq this year by Bush have either had no impact or are making things worse, which is why he's going to order up another 80,000 sent by the end of the year. You think September? Do you really think September? That's this magical date when Petraeus is supposed to issue a report to this thug. Do you think that's going to change anything? And by the way, isn't that telegraphing to our enemy a date certain when things are going to change? I thought we weren't supposed to. Oh, that's right. Only if you're a Democrat, only if it's a Democratic Party idea, only if it's written into a bill, then we can't do it. But if it's part of the Bush crime family's policy, then it's okay. I think all of us are starting to realize the truth here. The so-called 800-pound gorilla that sits over there in the corner of the room. What Bush and Cheney and their criminal gang have loosed on the world is endless war. The hostages, the American soldiers who were taken, 12, 14 days, I think on Mother's Day, 5 were killed and 3 were taken hostage. And they found one of the bodies. One thing that no news reporting organization in America will report is the condition that body was in when they found it. They won't do it because the horror and the shock that would fall upon the parents and the loved ones of that soldier would be unbearable. But because of what Gonzalez and Bush and Cheney and every single miserable, murderous member of the Bush crime family has done, whether it was at Abu Ghraib, whether it was mountains of nude Iraqi prisoners who had done nothing except get in the way of the American military machine, whether it was reports from Guantanamo or reports of rendition and torture, people being snatched off the streets and sent to foreign prisons, sent to ships sitting off Diego Garcia where they could be tortured in international waters. All of that has guaranteed that every single American who is captured will be tortured to a degree and mutilated to a degree that you and I can't even imagine, much less comprehend. The pain and the suffering of these 20-something soldiers when they are captured, when they fall into the hands of whoever it is we're fighting, the pain and the suffering that they are going to experience is medieval. It is beyond comprehension. And when their bodies are finally turned up, or when their bodies finally do turn up, it'll be impossible to look at that corpse and realize this was once a football player, a high school kid, someone's son. This is what George W. Bush and Alberto Gonzalez and Dick Cheney have done. And Reid and Pelosi, well, impeachment, you know, is off the table. Welcome back. 6:30 past the hour. This is the Nova M Radio Network. I'm Mike Malloy. I'll tell you what, before we do the sound bites from the press conference today, let's take some phone calls here. Starting with Frank, who is calling in from Atlanta. Frank, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Frank.
Pleasure to talk. I tried calling in last night. About Carter?
Yeah.
President Carter.
Right.
He was the best. He's decent, honest, honorable, respectable. He was the best president we ever had in our lifetime. And I don't know how anybody could say he wasn't an older man. And he had it back then. He's a Christian. But I got a few other things on the plate here, Mike.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Did we get the price gouging on oil?
Did what?
The price gouging on oil.
I think it passed the House. Bush has said he's going to veto it, though, so it really doesn't matter.
Okay. What Bush did when he got in office, it was one of them Friday... light thing.
Right.
The reason why we had cheap oil, and it was excuse me right now, but they only had so much they could make on a barrel of oil, and he done away with that. This is the reason why we got the high oil prices. we had the 40s, in the 40s, there was a law made that said they can only make so much out of a barrel of oil. The first thing he done when he got in the presidency was done away with that. This is the reason why we got high oil.
Well, that's true, Frank, and I can tell you that everything about Carter has been totally revised by these right-wing freaks, starting with Reagan. But I hear what you're saying. Thanks, Frank. Thanks for checking in. Gene is calling from San Francisco. Gene, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi, Mike.
Hey, Gene.
Have a little vocabulary lesson tonight.
I'd appreciate it.
Okay, Bush is a jingo.
A jingo.
A jingo. A jingo is a person who is boastful of his so-called patriotism and favors threatening, aggressive, and warring foreign policy. People before us got a word for this. It's in the dictionary. So we better start using it.
And I guess that's the root of the word, obviously, jingoistic.
The Republicans echo Jingo Bush with their words like support the troops,
right,
which is an expression of jingoism. Now, the words like support the troops, it's just a taunt, a jingoistic taunt that a jingo like Bush makes to his opposition and critics. Now, the polls, like you were talking about, they show that the bulk of the U.S. citizens are not falling for Bush's jingoism.
Mm-hmm.
Not anymore. But unfortunately, you know, the Dems, they've left their morality in the cloakroom. And they've cowering before Jingo Bush.
This is horrifying. I can't understand, Gene, at a time when the entire world and now the American public, the majority of the American public, has finally caught on to what the entire world has known for 4 years at least, possibly longer, that Bush is an incompetent warmongering thug who has designs on becoming a dictator. Given all that, no support. No respect, the Democratic Party leadership still will do nothing.
They let go of their goals. One of their goals was that this Iraq funding would be, starting in July, would be treated separately so that we could audit where the money is being spent. And they completely threw that away, I think. Maybe someone else can call in and clarify this.
I haven't heard anything about
it. But it looks like... Right. Now, extending it till September just throws that away, and we won't get an audit. And you know what that means? That means the money now can be stolen, shifted to maybe the permanent bases or these mercenaries. And so not one person is assured, not one penny is assured to support the troops.
Right.
So there's your support the troops.
It's stupefyingly unbelievable, Gene. I can't believe that the Democratic Party leadership has collapsed like this at a time when it would be so easy to stand up and resist this little tyrant, and they just refuse. They just won't do it.
Thanks so much for being here.
Well, thanks, Gene. Thanks for checking in. Take care. Appreciate your call. When I talk with Gene, it's like a moment. Any of you all remember Reader's Digest? Did people still read that? Do you remember that section of Pace to increase your word power? I feel like I just had a live session of it. Thank you, Gene. Jingo. I knew a blues musician named Django. Jingo. I always wondered where jingoistic came from. Now I know. See, you listen to this program, and thanks to the callers, certainly not me, but you learn things. Gary is calling from Joshua Tree, California. Hey, Gary, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike, thanks. Didn't you ever see the poltergeist? Don't bury the bird.
No, what happened?
Oh, God, the girl finds a bird, her parakeet, canary dies, she buried, they have a funeral for it, and because of them, scrupulous land developer put the housing development on a cemetery.
Yeah, Indian burial ground. I remember that part. Yeah. But what did the burial of the parakeet have to do with it? Did that open up a portal to hell? Or?
Well, it was like a foreboding of, you know, the burial of the dead.
Uh-oh.
Anyway, I just flashed on that whole scene when you were talking about your encounter with death.
Yeah, well, I've had lots of encounters with death, but it's an amazing thing to watch. I don't know how many of us pay attention to it. I have grown children, and I don't remember these kinds of moments with them. But because I'm more focused perhaps on my own mortality at this stage of my life, it is even clearer to me now when my almost three-year-old finally confronts, or not finally, but does confront something this profound.
Well, you know, children get messed up because parents say, well, they fell asleep or they're asleep now. And so they become afraid to fall asleep, thinking
yeah.
they won't wake up too.
Yeah, anyway. Molly did not have enough questions. I learned a long time ago, don't answer a question unless your child asks it.
Oh, that's so true.
You know, don't volunteer information. Just wait until when they're ready, whether mm-hmm. it's sex or death or birth or life or whatever it's about, when they're ready, they'll ask. You know, when they can handle the answer, that's the theory anyway, they'll ask. But I learned a long time ago, don't just start volunteering information and going into long, drawn-out physiological explanations for things, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, there's a whole bunch of people in America who can't handle the truth. And the truth is, I think, there's not much difference between the Republicans and the Democrats. The Democrats are enabling the Republicans.
It's the truth, isn't it?
It sure is.
Yeah, it's the truth.
You know, they rolled over on NAFTA and CAFTA and all the union-busting unemployment in America. They rolled over on this Iraq war. There's a few people who are fighting. But, God, it's an uphill struggle. There's something that, well, while I was listening, you mentioned homosexuality in the military.
Right.
European countries don't have a problem.
Most civilized countries don't, and I say civilized. Societies that are heavily religious have heavy religious component to the way they conduct themselves. Usually, it's hypocritical, but those mm-hmm. societies that do have a tremendous problem with all sorts of things sexual, including homosexuality, like Muslims, like Orthodox Jews, like conservative Christians. It's just, mm-hmm. you know, they can't handle it. And
I call them the American Taliban.
Yeah, well, that's a good name. All right, I got to leave it there. Thanks a lot for checking
bye.
In. All right, sir, I appreciate it, Gary. Take care. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Country of deep compassion. We care. One of the great things about America, one of the beauties of our country, is that when we see a young, innocent child blown up by an IED, we cry.
That is a great thing about America, isn't it? We have an endless, apparently, supply of tears for blown up children. Rosalind writes in, Mike, Django Reinhardt was a fabulous French jazz violinist. I used to have his music on vinyl. He was truly great as jazz musicians go. That's in reference to my reference to Jingo Django. I have a friend who is a blues guitarist named Mike Catalano, and he named one of his children Django. And I thought he had told me that he had named the little boy after, well, he's not little now. Django is what, Kathy? In his mid-20s, late-20s. But I thought he had told me he had named him after a blues musician. Thanks, Ross. I appreciate it. Django Reinhardt. Arlene in Maine writes, Mike, I heard today that one of the reasons the Democrats might be caving may be that Lieberman is holding over their heads the threat that he may go Republican. If he does that, then the Democrats lose the Senate and all the ongoing investigations come to a halt. Can you comment? Sure. You notice that Lieberman has become a non-person. Isn't it funny? You never hear anything about Lieberman anymore, ever. He's never on any of the talk shows anymore. Have you noticed that? Nothing. He's disappeared. He has sunk into... Lieberman is a fully paid operative of the Israeli government. Really. I mean, he just is. I don't mean he gets a paycheck from them. But and Lieberman has always been uncomfortable being a Democrat because the Democrats talk about the issue of human rights for Palestinians, and the Likud, the ultra-right-wing Israelis, of which there are many, cannot even deal with the thought of equality for the Palestinians or justice for the Palestinians. I might add that a huge number of Israeli citizens do advocate justice and fair play with the Palestinians. But Lieberman is not one of them. Lieberman defines the word Zionist, defines it, which has nothing to do with his Judaism. It has to do with his political point of view. Lieberman is a Zionist of the highest order. So when he is a member of a political party that insists over and over and over again of talking about the Israeli government's behavior in certain situations, that really pisses Lieberman off. Lieberman wants to hear none of that. He would be much more comfortable in the Christian fundamentalist cadre of Republicans because they, you know, will support Israel no matter what it does. But and the reason I think the reason Lieberman doesn't switch is because he understands that the Christian fundamentalists who own the Republican Party are useful fools. Lieberman understands. He knows what the final outcome is in these people's dominionist, Armageddonist thinking. Lieberman knows that if the Christian Messiah ever does give the signal, if the pile of bodies ever is high enough, that the Christians will immediately grab people like Lieberman, put a sword to his throat, and tell him he has about 3 seconds to accept Jesus Christ as his personal Lord and Savior. And when he does not, because Lieberman can't, they will bring the blade across his Adam's apple, and that's the end of Joe Lieberman. So Lieberman knows. He knows. Lieberman is playing both sides against some sort of middle. He'll stay with the Democratic Party. He will never, ever, ever sign up fully and completely and openly with the American Likud, which is the Republican Party, because he knows. He knows in the final showdown, these people hold the keys to whatever kind of metaphorical Auschwitz that they have in mind for people like Lieberman. He knows this. He knows it. But he also can't stand the idea that the Democrats advocate justice for the Palestinians. So there he sits. There he sits. If there had been justice when Lieberman was defeated in the Democratic primary Connecticut. Connecticut. He would have wound up in some right-wing think tank someplace financed by AIPAC or Wolf Blitzer or something like that. But no. So there's your comment. Let's see how many people that'll piss off, right? All right, right after this break, we are going to play the Giggling Killers press conference today, wherein a bird dropped on him, dropped his, how do you say it? I'd like to just say the S word, but I guess I can't.
Boy, it's a night of birds, isn't it?
I know it is. There's a video out there now on YouTube or wherever where you can hear the birds twittering in the background, all of a sudden, right on his sleeve. It was right after he said something about, staying with his Tejano. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Yeah. Don't go to bed angry. Let Mike Malloy do it for you on Nova M Radio.
Before the hour. We got this last night. Donald wrote it. He wrote, you folks are my only... the subject line says, don't give up. And then he writes, you folks are my only sanity in this very dark hour. Don't give up. I've worried for the last 2 weeks about Bush Cheney, as in worrying what cornered animals might do. I spoke about it then and have carried that fear with me since, like a heart murmur. Did you notice our little Iran war games today? I'm heartsick, really heartsick about the events of today. But it may actually be worse than we already know. The Democrats deserve every bit of our disgust tonight because we need some serious courage, but I do think the fear factor tactics may have been used more than we know on this day. Don't lose faith yet, but honestly, I'm despairing tonight just like you. All right, Donald, thanks. Sorry I didn't read it last night, but I don't know. You know, I don't know how to sort through my emotions, and... I've always generally been an optimist. I've had to be. I really have. I've always been basically an optimist. I've always been basically somebody who believed in certainly not the inherent goodness of people, because I think that's nonsense. But in the ability, as people get older, and hopefully wiser, and of course I'm not talking about everybody, that people start seeking solutions rather than ways to destroy something that's irritating them. You know, you solve the problem rather than smashing it. And in my lifetime, which probably parallels your lifetime to some degree, we've seen a lot of instances where that optimism just got, you know, repeatedly hammered into the ground. So right now, right now being the past couple of years, especially here lately, I'm not sure. I can't sort through the emotions properly, and in one sense, that's why I think having an almost 3-year-old is a blessing. It's also scary, but from a strictly selfish point of view, my selfishness, it's a blessing to have a little kid who is just discovering everything and. With whom you can't focus on things like the Bush crime family. You have to focus on, Daddy, why is that bird lying so still? Ugh. So I don't know how to sort through my own emotions. If you know, if any of you know, how you handle this, denial is, a gift. It really can be. How many times do we all use denial in order to get through a situation, right? All right. The giggling killer holds a press conference today. And if you listen closely, a couple of times in here he actually giggles. Oh, my God. On the caving in by the Democrats on the Iraq funding bill, this is from his opening remarks.
Today, Congress will vote on legislation that provides our troops with the funds they need. Makes clear that our Iraqi partners must demonstrate progress on security and reconciliation. My administration and members of Congress from both parties have had many meetings to work out our differences on this legislation. As a result, we removed the arbitrary timetables for withdrawal and the restrictions on our military commanders that some in Congress had supported.
What restrictions?
We were also successful in removing billions in unrelated domestic spending that many of the Democrats were insisting on.
Yeah, like Katrina relief.
I wanted to remove even more.
Yeah.
But still, by voting for this bill, members of both parties can show our troops and the Iraqis and the enemy that our country will support our service men and women in harm's way.
It's just astonishing. You know, I'm not going to editorialize. So how delusional is this freak? He still thinks there's a way to win in Iraq, that his new surge strategy is actually new. And he expects the American people to just, suck it up as the body count continues to climb.
Our new strategy is designed to help Iraq's leaders provide security for their people and get control of their capital so they can move forward with reconciliation and reconstruction.
With Halliburton, yeah.
Our new strategy is designed to take advantage of new opportunities to partner with local tribes.
Tribes.
To go after Al-Qaeda in places like Anbar.
Yeah.
Which has been the home base of Al-Qaeda in Iraq.
Thanks to you.
This summer is going to be a critical time for the new strategy.
Yeah.
The last of five reinforcement brigades we're sending to Iraq is scheduled to arrive in Baghdad by mid-June.
That's called a brigade.
As these reinforcements carry out their missions, the enemies of a free Iraq, including Al-Qaeda and illegal militias, will continue to bomb and murder in an attempt to stop us. We're going to expect heavy fighting in the weeks and months. We can expect more American and Iraqi casualties. We must provide our troops with the funds and resources they need to prevail.
Oh, my God. Boy, what, this guy's a walking recruitment for the military, isn't he? It's astonishing. He just stands there. It's just so matter-of-fact, so cavalier to this freak. We can expect more American casualties. Yeah. Bombs and murders and heavy fighting. Yeah, I've just got to continue to play. You know, I'm the president. I'm the decider. I'm the commander-in-chief. I make the rules. I'm the little dictator. Nobody can stop him. Have you noticed that? Not the Congress. Not either house of the Congress. Not the Democratic Party. The judiciary has become nothing more than Bush's whore. The American people can't stop him. The retired generals can't stop him. The soldiers in the field are afraid to mutiny because of what has been inculcated into their psyches by the time they enter a war zone. The families can't stop him. No matter who the families are, the families of the war dead, the families of the people who were killed, murdered in the 9/11 attack on this country that the Bush crime family allowed to happen, or made happen. Well, I don't think we'll ever know the truth there. Nobody can stop him. Nobody can stop this regime. Isn't that astonishing? I mean, that's the part that is just mind-boggling to me. Nobody can stop him. So now, after his opening comments, Bunny Pants takes questions from the press corps. This reporter asks about Iran. He says, Mr. President, the International Atomic Energy Agency says that Iran has significantly accelerated its uranium enrichment program. And today, President Ahmadinejad said that he would go ahead. He vowed to go ahead. There also is the detention of three Iranian Americans. Where is all this headed?
My view is that that we need to strengthen our sanction regime. I just spoke to Condoleezza Rice, and we will work with our European partners to develop further sanctions. And, of course, I will discuss this issue with Vladimir Putin as well as President Hu Jintao.
Oh, we're going to talk it over with the Russians and the Chinese. And does this freak really think that the Russians, that Putin is, it's Putin's nuclear industry that has helped the Iranians get where they are? And of course, what's his name? Donald Rumsfeld, when he helped free up nuclear technology to go to the Pakistanis, who then sold it to the North Koreans, who then sold it to some of it to the Iranians. So between Putin and Rumsfeld, the Iranians have gotten everything they could possibly need. So now this idiot is going to turn to Putin and say, hey, listen, I know you're making a lot of money, and I know that we are threatening you because we are surrounding your Russian Federation. We're surrounding you. Your old Warsaw Pact countries are becoming nothing more than militarized outposts for the United States military. But hey, listen, yo, can we get some cooperation on Iran? The man's insane. And I don't mean Putin. As far as the Chinese, yeah, okay, we're going to help America. We Chinese are because We want to see America suck up all the petroleum reserves. We don't want it. No, why would we want it? So, yeah, we'll help you, America. What do you want us to do? Oh, God. But Bush says that, you see. And he knows that a vast chunk of the American public, probably the majority, will listen to that. Oh, good. Well, he's going to get the Russians and the Chinese to help. Well, that's wonderful. I really like that idea. Next reporter asked about how much longer Bush would continue this failed adventure in Iraq that nobody wants. And we'll have that one when we come back. And some more from this insane, delusional press conference today. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
As a brick, and the love that I feel is so far away. I'm a bad dream that I just can't see. And you shake your head.
Tool of foreign policy for our country is try to let the sun shine in.
Ten before the hour. So the next reporter wants to know how long Bush is going to continue this failed occupation of Iraq. And the murder that's going on there, the reporter says, Mr. President, dozens of American troops have been killed this month, and sectarian violence appears to be rising again in Iraq. You yourself just said that you're expecting more casualties in the weeks and months ahead. How much longer do you believe you can sustain your current policy in Iraq without significant progress on the ground?
Obviously, you know, the loss of life is... It was devastating to families. I fully understand that.
Not your family.
But I want to remind you as to why I sent more troops in. It was to help stabilize the capital. You're asking me how much longer. We have yet to even get all our troops in place. General David Petraeus laid out a plan for the Congress. He talked about a strategy all aimed at helping this Iraqi government secure its capital so that they can do some of the political work necessary, the hard work necessary to reconcile. I would like to see us in a different configuration at some point in time in Iraq. However, it's going to require taking control of the capital.
Is that what it is now? Okay. It's no longer weapons of mass destruction. It's taking control of the capital. Is he referring to Baghdad or the oil? Now it gets interesting. Reporter Ed asks about a new Senate report that before his Iraq invasion, Bush ignored warnings that al-Qaeda would be strengthened and so would Iran by an attack by the United States on Iraq. The reporter says, Mr. President, a new Senate report this morning contends that your administration was warned before the war that by invading Iraq, you would actually give Iran and al-Qaeda a golden opportunity to expand their influence, the kind of influence you were talking about with al-Qaeda yesterday and with Iran this morning. Why did you ignore those warnings, sir?
Ed, going into Iraq, we were warned about a lot of things, some of which happened, some of which didn't happen.
Yeah.
And obviously, as I made a decision as consequential as that, I weighed the risks and rewards of any decision.
Ah.
As to al-Qaeda in Iraq, al-Qaeda is going to fight us wherever we are. See, that's their strategy. Their strategy is to drive us out the Middle East.
Oh, geez.
And so we're fighting them in Iraq. We're fighting them in Afghanistan. We've help the Philippines fight, Philippine government fight them. We're fighting them.
Oh.
And this notion about how this isn't a war on terror, in my view, is
is naive.
Oh, my God.
That doesn't reflect the true nature of the world in which we live.
Oh, my God.
You know, the lessons of September the 11th are these. We've got to stay on the offense. We've got to bring these people to justice before they hurt again.
Before they hurt again. Yeah. Okay. I got nothing to say about that. Next reporter asks how Bush can consider himself a credible manager of the war after so many disastrous failures. Reporter says, Mr. President, after the mistakes have been made in this war, when you do as you did yesterday, where you raised two-year-old intelligence talking about the threat posed by al-Qaeda, it's met with increasing skepticism. The majority in the public, a growing number of Republicans, appear not to trust you any longer to be able to carry out this policy successfully. Can you explain why you believe you're still a credible messenger on the war?
I'm credible because I read the intelligence, David, and make it abundantly clear in plain terms that if we let up, we'll be attacked.
Yeah.
And I firmly believe that.
And you're firmly mad.
Yeah, I talked about intelligence yesterday. I wanted to make sure the intelligence I laid out was credible, so we took our time.
Yeah.
Somebody said, well, he's trying to politicize the thing. If I was trying to politicize it, I'd have dropped it out before the 2006 elections.
Oh, okay.
Failure in Iraq will cause generations to suffer, in my judgment. Al-Qaeda will be emboldened.
Oh.
They will say, yeah, once again, we've driven the great soft America out of a part of the region. It will cause them to be able to recruit more.
Didn't you just hear the question about the Senate report stating that an Iraq invasion would be a recruiting tool for al-Qaeda, monkey man? You are the reason al-Qaeda moved into Iraq. You have made the United States less secure. You have shipped all our National Guard troops and equipment to Iraq. You are endangering this nation. If I was trying to politicize it, I'd have dropped it out before the 2006 elections. Aren't we in an election cycle now, you freak? Oh, God. Next reporter asked about the confusing hypocrisy of Bush telling the Democrats that he won't accept a timeline because it would embolden the enemy while giving Petraeus a fixed timeline in September. Listen to Bush's totally cavalier attitude about the death and bloodshed that is to come as a result of his artificial timeline, and tell me he's not a madman. Reporter says, I'd like to ask you about the Petraeus report, Mr. President, which, as you say, will be in September and report on the progress. Doesn't setting up the September date give the enemy exactly what you've said you don't want them to have, which is a date to focus on, and doesn't it guarantee a bloody August?
David Petraeus felt like that it was important to tell the White House and tell the Congress that he would come back with an assessment in September. It's his decision to give the assessment, and I respect him. It could make August a tough month.
Oh,
because you see, what they're going to try to do is kill as many innocent people as they can to try to influence the debate here at home. Don't you find that interesting? I do. That they recognize that the death of innocent people could shake our will. And so, it could be a bloody, it could be a very difficult August.
No amount of death will shake your will, Mr. Bush, because you are insane. And I think everybody knows that now. And just a question of whether or not we can survive your madness. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. This is the Nova M Radio Network. I'm Mike Malloy. Back to, we have two left here. The madman's press briefing today. While a bird flew overhead and dropped birds drop on this freak. How symbolic. On the increased violence in Iraq and the fact that Bush has become al-Qaeda's number one recruiting tool, this reporter says, Mr. President, are you surprised by reports today from the Iraqis that sectarian killings are actually on the rise to pre-troop surge levels? And if I may, yesterday after your speech, Senator Joe Biden said al-Qaeda in Iraq is a Bush-fulfilling prophecy. They weren't there before. Now they're there. He said U.S. troops should get out of the middle of a civil war and fight al-Qaeda. Can you respond to that?
Yeah, there's been an uptick in violence. It's a snapshot. It's a moment. Al-Qaeda will fight us wherever we are.
Oh, God.
That's what they do. That's what they said they want to do. They have objectives. You know, the Middle East looked nice and cozy for a while.
What?
Everything looked fine on the surface, but beneath the surface there was a lot of resentment. There was a lot of frustration. Such that 19 kids got on airplanes and killed 3,000 Americans.
Kids?
It's in the long-term interest of this country to address the root causes of these extremists and radicals exploiting people, causing them to kill themselves and kill Americans and others.
Exactly. Exactly, you stupefyingly insane freak. The root causes of their violence and hatred of Americans is because, listen, Mr. Bush, we kill their people. We occupy their countries or support nations that do. We take their oil. We loot their antiquities. We rob their banks. Why not address that problem instead of continuing to kill them and steal from them? Do you really think we can bomb them into liking us? George, you can't beat people up and have them say, I love you. My God. There was a lot of resentment, a lot of frustration, he says, such that 19 kids got on airplanes and killed 3,000 Americans. The insanity of this man is beyond belief. His absolute corruption of language is unique. No one. Nero, maybe? Caligula? No one has used or uses language like this insane man. I'm not talking about the misuse of language in a political context. I'm talking about the misuse of language just in normal discourse. He's being asked a question. 19 kids? Is that what Muhammad Atta was? If Muhammad Atta had anything to do with it. 19 kids came and killed 3,000. Oh, God. Last one tonight. This reporter asked about Bush's desperate-sounding speech yesterday about Osama and Iraq. Sit down, brace yourself, get ready for more unintended irony from this idiot. The question, Mr. President, yesterday you discussed Osama bin Laden's plans to turn Iraq into a terrorist sanctuary. What do you think your own reaction would have been 5 years ago had you been told that toward the end of your term, he would still be at large with that kind of capability, from Iraq, no less? And why, can you tell the American people, why is he still at large?
Why is he at large? Because we hadn't got him yet, Jim. That's why. And he's hiding. And we're looking.
Oh, my God.
And we will continue to look until we bring him to justice. We brought a lot of his buddies to justice, but not him. That's why he's still at large.
Buddies?
He's not out there traipsing around. He's not leading many parades, however.
Traipsing?
He's not out feeding the hungry.
Oh, my God.
And in a war against extremists and radicals like these, we ought to be listening carefully to what they say. We ought to take their words seriously.
Okay.
There have been moments in history where others haven't taken the words of people seriously, and they suffered.
Really? What did Osama say? Get out of Saudi Arabia. Stop supporting the Israelis unconditionally where it concerns the Palestinians. And stop the sanctions against the people of Iraq. But you didn't listen. You didn't take the words seriously. You know what words, other words I wish you had taken seriously? You freak. The presidential daily brief entitled Osama Determined to Strike Within the U.S. Imagine how much suffering could have been avoided if this useless blob of human DNA had taken those words seriously. There really isn't anything to say any longer about this man. To the extent that he is doing what he's doing, he's walking the path of someone who is clinically, definably insane. The answers he tosses out there, the death and destruction. I wonder if the family in California, who today found out that the body floating in the Euphrates River was their son, I wonder if they consider that a snapshot. Only someone who is insane can talk like that. A snapshot. Oh, my God. Okay. Let's do some phone calls here, starting with Stephen in Miami. Stephen, welcome to the program. Hey, Stephen.
Yeah. Yeah, Mike, you there?
Yes.
Okay. Mike, I didn't know if you heard about this or not. I don't know if it's true or not, but last night, for the first hour of another radio show, a full hour, they had this guy on, a guest, he was saying that on May the 9th that George Bush signed some type of a document.
Yeah, we talked about it last night.
Oh, I missed that then. Right.
Yeah, in the event, or the night before, in the event of any sort of what he considers to be a national emergency, he now
right.
has the power to...
All right.
Totally,
I just wanted to make sure that you knew
yeah,
about it.
Yeah,
all.
Totally take over the government. Right.
Do you think it's true?
Absolutely.
All right. I just wanted to make sure you knew about that. That's all.
And the reason it's true is because when questioned about it by mainstream reporters, I think earlier this week or maybe yesterday, maybe today, the answer was the White House has no comment.
Yeah. And also the mainstream media, as far as I know, they didn't mention it at all.
I don't. As far as I know, you're right. That didn't happen.
As far as I know.
Mm-hmm. Me too. All right. Thanks, Stephen. I appreciate you checking in. Jake is calling from Arcata, California. Jake, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
It's moving right along.
You know, if hell exists, if there actually is a hell, then George W. Bush is going there. You know, and speaking of going to hell, you know, let's talk about these so-called leaders of the Democrats in the Congress. How is this vote, 280, to support Bush and his stupid war with no restrictions, no timetables, nothing, right? 142 against. And apparently, according to ABC Radio, 85 Democrats, only 85 Democrats voted against it. So is that true that, in fact, a majority of the House Democrats voted for this turkey of a bill?
It is true. And guess who voted for it? Jack Murtha. Hold on a second, Jake. I'll put you on hold and come back. I got a break here. Stay with us, Truth Seekers. I'm Mike Malloy.
The low road, the past is over. I agree. We all know the importance of bondage between mother and child in the home. But it's hard to put
hear the voices, and I read the front page, but I'm the decider, and I decide what is best.
Forty-one past the hour. Back to Jake in Arcata. All right, Jake, where were we?
Well, Mike, you're talking about the Democratic leadership, or so-called leadership anyways. You know, I think it's time for us Democrats in the grassroots to get serious about some sort of mutiny in the party. It's time to kick these idiots out. I mean, people like Rahm Emanuel, give me a break. And personally, I'd like to see Russ Feingold take Harry Reid's job. I'd like to see, you know, Barbara Lee from across the bay in Oakland take Nancy Pelosi's job. I'd like to see some real Democrats with some backbones and progressives take over this party, because this so-called, you know, moderate group of Democrats, you know, mm-hmm. they're doing nothing other than destroying the party.
Or the party has been destroyed. No, I agree with everything you say, Jake. I don't know what to do anymore. I said this 2 years ago. I don't know why I'm still saying it. I do know what to do, and that is to run. Don't walk. Run as far away from this Democratic Party as humanly possible. Become a Democratic socialist like, what's his name? The independent from Vermont.
Bernie Sanders.
Bernie Sanders. Become a Democratic socialist and work for social justice in this country. Work for universal health care. Work for federal control of the energy industry. And take it out of the hands of these filthy corporations. Get some decent people. And I'm drifting at this stage of my life towards democratic socialism, and I think that's where I'm going to wind up. I've just so had it. I've just so had it, like so many people have had.
You're right, Mac. I mean, just follow the money on this. Look at these Democrats, you know, these so-called blue dogs, these moderates like my congressman in North Coast, California, Mike Thompson. These guys are taking money from Lockheed Martin, mm-hmm. taking money from defense contractors. You know, I mean, so no wonder they're not doing a hell of a lot to end the war.
That's right. That's right. Look at Dianne Feinstein's husband.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Jake, thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. We'll chat again. Take care,
thanks,
Jake.
Thanks, Mike.
All right. A couple of quick emails here. That soundbite Kathy just played of Bush. I hear the voices. Bob in Amherst, Mass. writes, Mike, wasn't the Tower of Babel more than one person? Were you ever locked in a room with an idiot who blathered on and on and on, paced around talking incessantly about imaginary plots and ghosts and attempts to apply logic to it? Try sticking your fingers in your ears. Does he have more than 8 years in mind? Da-da-da-da-da-da. Was it poor toilet training, still trying to get it right for mommy? I don't know. It's madness. Hi, Mike. Hi, Kathy. I just read this from Carolyn Casey's monthly mailer. It makes me shiver. Here's what it says. One of our Coyote Network news allies reports that at the polo match in Leesburg, Virginia on May 12th, the halftime, quote, entertainment, end quote, was comprised of the Blackwater Mercenary Private Army parachuting onto the field trailing red smoke designed to look like blood, accompanied by the American anthem in a recording by Journey, a la Jimi Hendrix version. This was followed by a staged drug bust, which was then followed by the Washington Redskins cheerleaders, and topped off by the macabre revelation that many of the Blackwater mercenary parachutists were double amputees with robotic metal legs. Oh, my God. Doug in Berkeley. Whoa. Elizabeth in San Diego writes, Mike, what strikes me more than anything George Bush utters publicly is that he delivers his marks through a leering sneer. He absolute revels in grief, no agony, and his power to inflict it on a castrated citizenry with precise contempt and deep hatred. Somebody said megalomaniac this evening. Something's got to give. Elizabeth in San Diego. George in Seattle writes, Mike, the reason George Bush has elevated the actions of a handful of Muslim extremists into an ideological war of civilizations is because without the Soviet threat, George Bush and neocons didn't have a common enemy to control us and justify our military spending. So in steps Al-Qaeda, the perfect enemy to serve the neocons' needs. With Al-Qaeda, Bush and the neocons have the perfect excuse to make war on the world and to make war on their political enemies here at home. Because of Al-Qaeda, George Bush can beat down his political opposition by claiming they are with the terrorists. Because of Al-Qaeda, Bush believes he can do anything he wants to our constitutional rights. Because of Al-Qaeda, Bush has elevated himself to be effectively king of America. If Bush didn't have Al-Qaeda to justify everything he does, he would have to create them. On second thought, maybe he has. From Brandon, Mike, I feel that we the people don't matter anymore. My wife has been telling me as I tried to keep a positive outlook about our government. I would remain optimistic while she remained the cynic. She was right. The Republicans are corrupt while the Democrats have no spine. The joke's on me and I feel like a fool. I voted to change the Congress for the express reason to end the war in Iraq. I figured impeachment was unattainable because the Democrats don't have a 60-vote majority. We were given false hope of real change. I feel like we're in some alternate universe where reason and common sense are considered mental illness and criminal insanity is perfectly normal. Brandon. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Rage on. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. All right, I'm getting an awful lot of good emails tonight. I wish I could read them all, but I can't. But I want to share this one with you before I go back to the calls. This is from Alicia. She writes, "Hi, Mike. I haven't blogged in almost a month. I can't imagine I have any readers left at this point, considering how little I've given them lately. It's okay, I guess, since I have a book deadline to meet, a job to hold down, and a family to take care of. We're aiming for July 14th as the due date, so I spend every second I have trying to get this done. In addition, this morning I woke up with a stomach flu and haven't been able to get out of bed all day. Blogging was not particularly on my agenda, but I'm sick with more than the stomach flu. Trust me, Alicia. Kathy and I know about your stomach flu." She writes, "It hurt my heart to watch the Dems fold today. We elected them last November on one issue, get us out of the war. Nancy Pelosi promised no more blank check for Bush. What happened today? Blank check for Bush. My problem is, I see dead people. Every single day I see dead people and read about dead people and think about dead people. With each passing day, I see more dead people. Dead Americans, dead Iraqis, dead soldiers, dead bystanders, dead women, dead children. Does anyone else? If they do, I wish they'd act like it. I'll tell you who doesn't see dead people, though. The cowboy coward of Crawford and Swingin' Dick and Halliburton and Blackwater. What exactly do they see when they look in the mirror? Probably not much. A vampire has no reflection." Alicia, yeah, I see dead people. And the way they're dying, and the reason that they're dying. This is unbelievable stuff. I mean, it's just unbelievable stuff. Back to your phone calls. Todd is calling from Coconut Grove, Florida. Todd, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Second time, Mike, and I don't want to be ghoulish, but here in Miami, there's a section called the road that's diagonal to the streets and avenues, and I took home a stray dog, and his tail never stopped wagging. Mm-hmm. And I was watching CNN before the first Gulf War, and I saw a dog that looked just like Rhodes. And four guys took that dog and ripped his legs off. And I'll leave it at that. So I'll let you comment.
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
They were protesting the United States coming into Iraq.
Yeah.
They took this poor dog.
Yeah.
And ripped his four legs off, and it was on CNN. I don't know how many people saw it, but I saw it.
Oh,
and
God.
I'll never forget it, and he looked just like my dog, Rhodes. And if you want to talk about brutality and savagery and being in the wrong place.
Todd, forgive my ignorance, but I'm still drawing a blank here. I understand what you're saying. I can't put it into any context.
Well, you're talking about the death and the brutality,
right?
And the body in the river. I didn't want to broach that directly, but the savagery of where we are and why we're there. But that is a true report of poor persons taking a dog and ripping it apart in protest of our being in there in the first war. And that's a true report. I'm not making it up.
Okay, and I think that is particularly horrifying to pick on a poor dumb beast like that who's done nothing.
Exactly.
On the other hand, when I think about 1991, when George Herbert Walker Bush ordered the invasion, the first invasion of Iraq, and we literally slaughtered. It was called the Highway of Death. 200,000 Iraqi soldiers who didn't want to fight for this tyrant. They were fleeing from Kuwait. They were fleeing from the Saudi-Iraqi border. And the American military flew over with its allies and butchered them. So many of these people were blown to pieces from the rear. And then we spent the next 12 years blowing up their children, their old people.
I'm not blaming them, Mike. I'm just saying that that's the cauldron that we're in.
Right, but the thing I think we need to keep in mind is that to a certain extent, I brook no sympathy for religious fanatics, whether they're Christian, Jewish, or Islamic. I think they're all mad. They're all insane. But I don't think that Iraq was the cauldron of violence and murder and mayhem. Oh, I know Saddam was a torturing thug and should have been removed by his own people. He should have been taken out some dark night and beheaded. I understand that, but we made sure that wouldn't happen by destroying their middle class. So I don't know. I get what you're saying, but I think to the extent that we have been involved in that country since the 80s, we have contributed this. We supported Saddam. Saddam was our boy, just like the Shah of Iran was our boy. And these were both torture junkies. These were torture fetishists. The Shah of Iran developed something called the Savak, based on our CIA and with the help from the Mossad and the CIA to set up torture chambers that you and I would vomit just hearing what went on in there. Saddam did the same thing. So I appreciate the story of the dog. I really do. But we have supported and promoted and nourished torture of human beings in that part of the world for the past 30 years.
I agree 100%.
Okay.
And we have no argument. I just wanted to bring up how deadly the area is. And that was a testimony to that fact, how
right.
deadly it is.
I got you.
I'll leave it at that.
All right, Todd. Thanks for checking in. Appreciate your call. Take care. Ben Birch, our former archiver and the head of WhiteRoseSociety.org, is checking in. Hey, Ben.
Hey there, Mike.
And now very active with HeadOnRadio.com, right? HeadOnRadio.com.
Yep. And
Nova M.
Nova M.
That's
you
right.
Yeah, where I still do the archiving for this
you
show.
You just have your fingers in more pots than I knew existed.
Well, you know, and that goes the reason for this call. You say, how do you deal with the emotions of seeing your country raped?
Yeah.
Did you know that in the last 14 days, I computed this, we have lost one American soldier every 7 hours?
Oh, my God.
And the rate is accelerating.
Yeah.
You know, I've got a graph of the slope of the line, you know, since we entered this thing. We are approaching the rate of deaths we had during the first few days before Bush declared victory.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
All right?
Yeah.
You know, it is absolutely the case that it won't be middle of August before we are at 4,000 deaths. It probably won't even be the end of July before we are at 4,000 deaths. And the next 1,000 will take about a month and a half.
Mm-hmm.
So how do I deal with this? Well, you know, back in 2002, I founded WhiteRoseSociety.org.
Right.
And I've been archiving liberal and progressive talk radio every single day since then.
Mm-hmm.
And I, in fact, quit my, you know, very lucrative career to do this for a living.
Right.
Because it was the only way I could deal with my anger was to be doing something practical every single day to fight these guys. And if people are out there, you know, and you've got this show, you can rant.
Right.
You get to get it out every night.
Right.
But, you know, there are people out there who are listening who are just tearing themselves up inside and are wondering what it is they can do, and they're wringing their hands and they're posting on Internet message boards. And you know what, guys? Posting's not going to make it. You got to actually do something. Get out there. Quit your jobs. Find some way to support yourself at a starvation level if necessary, and be a full-time activist. And you know what? You'll stop having those stomach pains, and you'll actually be able to sleep at night.
You know, that's a good idea for a single man or single woman who only has themselves to answer to. But you're enough of a realist, Ben, to understand that that whittles down to about 1 or 2 or maybe 3% of the people who listen to liberal talk radio. So, you know, I agree with you. Another reason I have this job, you're absolutely right, because it gives me a chance to get this out. But, you know, every day I have to fill myself up with this crap in order to get it out. But one of the reasons I have this job is so I can make my mortgage payment. I try not to advise people to do things that I simply could not do. And one of them would be to, you know, like quit my job and become a political activist. Now, some people will say, well, you are a political activist. No, I'm not. I do a radio talk show. I understand what you're saying, though. I just I think most of the people listening to you understood what you said. I just don't want people to walk away from what you said thinking, well, Jesus, you know, what does Ben Birch want me to do? You know, just
understood. And no, you have to be practical, but everyone's got some amount of that they can do.
Well, that's true. That part is true. Ben, good to hear from you. I got a break. Thank you, sir. Take care. Okay. All right. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Gives a damn about the future of children. Just building a cash flow, making a bank account. Let us expose the truth. Is that what the war's about? Cause I don't understand. But what kind of a man should have to sacrifice his life for an area of sin? All the turmoil's making my blood boil.
10 before the hour. Thanks to Ian Huff, engineer of the program tonight in Phoenix at KPHX, our flagship station. He also answered your calls. Thanks to our senior correspondent, Chris, in Minnesota. Mark Marshall, our webmaster. Catherine Bay is our executive producer. If you haven't gone to NovaMradio.com and signed up for downloads and podcasts and become a founding member, I just have one question for you. Why not? Is it me? Back to your phone calls. Gary is calling from Indiana. Hey, Gary.
Hey. I hope Kathy's feeling better.
Yeah, she's feeling much better.
Oh, okay. There's a couple things. This whole war funding thing just, it infuriated me. And then I actually sat down and read the bill. And there's one part in that bill that nobody seems to have been reporting on, which is that if the Iraqi government tells us to get out, we have to leave. That kind of surprised me because nobody said anything about it. You know, and if I'm not mistaken, the Iraqi parliament already said we had to let them, you know, they wanted us to go.
Well,
they signed a petition.
Yeah, they've said something to that effect. It's never, that sort of stuff is never reported in American media because American media has become nothing but prostitutes for the defense and the energy industries. But, yeah, there was something about that. Now that Bush has opened his mouth and said it, maybe the Iraqi parliament, before they go on their two-month vacation, and remember, the Iraqi government, who was it that said it, I quoted the other night, is nothing more than a cell phone number, and the number is either constantly busy or disconnected. But maybe if the Iraqi parliament, would take a vote asking the Americans to get out before they left on vacation, wouldn't that be interesting? Wouldn't it be fun to see what the reaction would be on the part of this megalomaniac in the White House?
Yeah, it would, I mean, see, the thing is, unless he puts one of those signing statements in,
yeah.
And the thing is, in my opinion, what has to happen is he has to sign that bill. Once he signed that bill, if he doesn't put one of his famous signing statements, then, you know, the Iraqi parliament can vote. If they do,
then the game is over.
The game is over because, I mean, that is actually in the bill. I actually sat down and read the bill. I think that you know, probably Republicans are sitting around laughing because we're blasting each other as Democrats, you know, because of this whole debacle. But, I mean, if you want to get right down to it, the true people who need to be blamed are the Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, they're the ones that, I mean, the Democrats, they put up bills, two or
mm-hmm.
three bills?
Right.
To end this thing.
Right.
You know, to put a deadline on it. And the Republicans refuse to go along with it. Now, I understand that a lot of people think, well, we should have went ahead and continued sending the same bill over and over again. But, you know, the fact is, the American media, as much as we both hate it, they're going to crucify the Democrats for doing that.
Sure.
So they really had no other choice. I mean, you know,
well, I disagree. I really disagree. I'm one of the first people to say the American, the general public is willfully ignorant in this country. We don't care. We can tell you the judges on American Idol, but I'll guarantee you that the majority of Americans can't name three judges on the U.S. Supreme Court. So, you know, I have no sympathy for the American public. On the other hand, I do think that the American public now is understanding, is coming to terms with the fact that this killer has done what he's done. You understand what I mean?
Yeah, I do. But, you know, the same thing, I don't know. Mike, the thing that bothers me is that you look back at 2004 and, you know, even at that point, enough people in this country knew that Iraq was a horrible mistake.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't remember the exact poll numbers, but there was a lot of, I mean, you know, a majority that knew that Iraq was a mistake, but yet they were still able to, through the media, manipulate things, and I think that's what the Democrats are worried about. I mean, in my opinion, excuse me, this war is going to end. It's going to end before the next election. The Republicans are going to see to that because they know that if they don't end that war, they're out for the next generation.
Oh, God, Gary, I so disagree with you there. I really do. This is an endless war. This is going to go on and on and on. And I think both you and I are making an assumption, and the assumption is that there's going to be an election in 2008. You know,
well, yeah, actually, I agree with that.
Yeah, so, I hear what you're saying, but I disagree with you about this war ending before the next election. That's just not going to happen because that's the one bloody ace in the hole that the Republican Party has used since 2003. You know, vote for us or the terrorists will come here and eat our children. So, no, the war is going to go on and on and on. Now, the other horrifying reality is that whoever is the next president, if there is a next president, if it is a Democrat, which if there is a next president, it will be a Democrat. That person will have this war to deal with for another 4 years. The next president will have it to deal with, and the next, and the next. This has gone way beyond the tipping point. Bush has taken us into a situation now that is almost who was the author who talked about it, Endless War. I know a lot of authors have talked about it. But this is the madness that we, the American people, and the people in the UK have allowed to happen, and that is the madness of Iraq. I'm sorry, but I just...
Well, I think a lot of... I agree with you to a certain extent, but I think if there is another election, I think that enough Democrats can get in that it actually will end.
Well, Gary, I hope you're right, and I have to leave it on that note. Thanks.
All right,
thanks a lot, Gary. I appreciate you checking in. I'll see you all tomorrow night, okay? Thanks for participating in the program tonight. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.